Hello and welcome. You are listening to podcast 3 for the lecture on propositional logic. We resume on slide 35. Slide 35 has introduced the algorithm for resolution. So given a knowledge base, we apply a number of resolution steps until we can either return the empty clause and find out that the knowledge base is unsatisfiable, or until no further applications of the rule are possible. Before we prove some important properties of resolution, I want to discuss the resolution rule a little further on slide 36. You may be inclined to resolve two clauses if they contain a set of complementary literals, but no other disjoint literals. However, this would be an unsound and incorrect resolution step. Look at the example on the slide. So we have two clauses, not Q and not P, and another clause, Q and P. So it looks as if we could immediately derive the empty clause. However, this would be incorrect because this set of two formulas is satisfiable and not inconsistent. To see this, let us construct a satisfying interpretation for the knowledge base. So we can, for example, assign 0 to Q and P to 1. This makes the second clause true. For the first clause, we obtain the opposite values. Again, one of the literals in the disjunction is true, so the entire disjunction and clause is true. Both clauses are true, and with this, the clause set as a whole is true. If we simply resolved, then we would get false implied by our knowledge base, which can't be the case. So you cannot apply the resolution rule here because there are no disjoint literals in these clauses that would remain after resolution step and that we had to actually make true. Let's proceed on slide 37. We will show that resolution is refutation complete. So we can show that our knowledge base is unsatisfiable if and only if we can derive the empty clause. So resolution is sound. This follows directly from the contradiction theorem. So if we could derive the empty clause, then this means that the knowledge base and the negation of the empty clause are unsatisfiable. The negation of the empty clause is true, so the knowledge base must be unsatisfiable. For the proof of completeness, we proceed by induction. So we need to show that if we not derive the empty clause, then our knowledge base must be satisfiable. We do this by showing that a satisfying interpretation for this knowledge base must then exist. I don't want to go into all the details of this text because you can also read it step by step from the slides. For the proof, we consider the so-called deductive closure of the knowledge base, so the set of all clauses that can be derived from the knowledge base. And as we cannot derive the empty clause from our knowledge base, which is our assumption, this is equivalent to the case that the empty clause is not contained in this deductive closure. And now we will actually construct this valid interpretation of the knowledge base on the following two slides. So we do this inductively. We assume that such an satisfying interpretation exists for a clause, a set of size n, and then we show that we actually can construct a satisfying interpretation for an additional clause that we add to this knowledge base. In this interpretation, this clause is either assigned true or false, and we show this by contradiction, assuming that both are not satisfied when when we actually assign one of these truth values and then arriving at a contradiction. So as a consequence of this proof, we can actually show that we can always find a satisfying assignment by a so-called greedy value selection, as explained on slide 40. So in this construction, we proceed as follows. We start with an empty interpretation I, so we have no truth values assigned to any clause. Now let's now assume we have a single clause in our knowledge base. So we take one of the literals in this clause and we must either assign it 0 or 1. So we are free here to choose it, and we will actually take the, let's say, good interpretation for P1 that makes our clause true, and we add it into 1. So by this now we proceed until we've selected values P1 to PK minus 1, so for all these literals. So now from the proof we know that setting now either PK to 0 or PK to 1 satisfies the set of all clauses that can be derived from our knowledge base and that do not contain other literals than beyond the set PK. So now we select actually the value for PK that works, and we add it to I. And once we've reached N, then we've actually found a satisfying interpretation so that makes the knowledge, all clauses that can be derived from the knowledge base true. Let's look at an example for how resolution can be used in the Wumpus world on slide 41. So now we formalize the perceptions and the rules in this world as logical formulas. So on cell 1-1, our agent does not perceive any breeze, and the agent does not perceive any stench. Furthermore, we consider a set or subset of the rules that hold in this world. So for example, the first rule states that if the agent perceives stench in cell 1-1, then the Wumpus must be on one of the neighboring cells. If the agent perceives a breeze in the cell, then there must be a pit on either the one of the neighboring cells, either the one next to this current cell or on top of this current cell. Furthermore, we can also conclude some information from the absence of certain percepts. So if we don't perceive any stench, then we actually know that the Wumpus is not on the current cell and also not on any of the neighboring cells. If we do not notice a breeze, then we know that there is no pit. And if neither the Wumpus or is on a cell and there is also no pit, then the cell is actually okay. So what we want to show here is that the cells 2-1 and 1-2 are okay. So this means we also need to derive information that there is no Wumpus and no pit on the cell. So we start building our knowledge base. So we rewrite the implications in clause form, and the rewriting rules are summarized at the bottom of the slide. So this leads to a set of formula on which we can now perform resolution. Of course, we add the statements that we want to prove in negated form to this knowledge base. So slide 42 now shows possible resolution steps. So for example, we have two unit clauses, not B11 and not S11, and now we can actually take these unit clauses and perform resolution. So this then, for example, allows us to derive further unit clauses with the formulas that you see in the second and third line. So once we have more unit clauses now stating some absence of the Wumpus on the neighboring cells, we can actually now proceed further and resolve on these unit clauses. Furthermore, we also have with this first resolution step derived some unit clauses that also show us the absence of pits. Now we can actually take these unit clauses and further derive statements about the okay state. So actually we had these unus clauses in fact make the antecedents of certain rules true that say, tell us that a field is okay. So we resolve first on the unit clauses, not W12 and not W21. And then second, we resolve on the two unit clauses, not P12 and not P21. So this leads in the last line to four more unit clauses, where actually the claim that we want to prove is contained in. So now we can actually resolve on both these unit clauses, but it would be sufficient to take just one of the pairs and derive the empty clause. So with this, we have shown that the next neighboring cells are safe and that our agent can actually move a step forward onto these cells. So in the last theorem, we proved that resolution is so-called refutation complete. So if there we have an unsatisfiable knowledge base, we can actually prove this by deriving the empty clause. However, resolution is not complete in a general case. An example for the incompleteness of resolution is shown on slide 43. Let's look at the formula that is stated in the first line. So the formula P or Q and not Q or R actually entails the formula P or R or S, where S is some arbitrary new atom. The entailment is true, but we cannot directly derive the formula P or R or S by resolution. We can show that it is implied by the formula on the left-hand side, but resolution is not a method that would allow us, for example, to add a new atom to a disjunction. We can always do this without changing the truth value of an existing disjunction, but we have no rule in resolution that allows us to perform such a step. So what the only thing we can do is once that we have a hypothesis that, for example, the formula P or R or S follows from the formula on the left-hand side, we can add the negation of our hypothesis to our knowledge base consisting of the two conjunctions, and then actually prove that indeed our hypothesis is correct. So you see the resolution proof in the lower part of the slide. And indeed, P or R or S follows from the left-hand side of the formula because we can derive the empty clause, but we cannot directly generate the formula P or R or S using some rule in the resolution calculus. So now the insights we obtain with resolution will actually help us to derive a very powerful form of satisfiability checking that is widely used in AI to solve all kinds of problems. So we summarize this on slide 44. We do so-called satisfiability checking or SAT checking. In many application scenarios, we want to know if an arbitrary formula is satisfiable. And this is the case if we can construct a model of this formula. So to construct a model, we need to find a truth assignment for all the Boolean variables in this formula that makes the formula true. So we are looking again for a satisfying interpretation. If we cannot construct such a model, then we know that the formula is unsatisfiable. So now from the contradiction theorem, we also know that if our knowledge base united with the negated claim that we want to prove is unsatisfiable, then our knowledge base actually implies the formula. So this, very often we are interested in deriving knowledge that follows from a set of assumptions, so we can actually derive this to satisfiability checking. So this means satisfiability checking can be used like a calculus. So when we've shown that the joint formula set is unsatisfiable, then we also know that this newly added clause follows from the knowledge base. So let's summarize a few more observations that we've made on clauses so far. So remember that clauses are a disjunction of literals. The disjunction is unsatisfied if all of its literals are assigned the value false. So a disjunction is only false if each literal is false. It is satisfied if at least one literal is assigned the value true. A clause is called a unit clause. We've seen it in a way that the clause only contains a literal, but we can also look at this in terms of the assigned truth values. So we can now say that a clause is unit if all literals but one are assigned a value 0 and the remaining literal is unassigned. Now we know that this remaining literal must be assigned true, because only then the clause can be satisfied. A clause is called unresolved. It is neither unsatisfied nor satisfied nor unit. So we still have literals in this clause for which we do not have decided on assigning certain truth values. Let's proceed with a few more observations. So we've seen that a clause is true if at least one literal is true, because a clause is disjunction. A conjunction of clauses, a sentence, is false if at least one clause is false, which occurs when each of the literals is false. So even if other literals in other clauses and also literals in other clauses do not have yet truth values assigned, we can immediately conclude about the truth value of a sentence. So in many situations, a sentence can be judged false or true before the model is even completely constructed. So let's look at an example. So here we have a formula A or B and not A or C. We have two clauses, AB, AC. So for these clauses to be true, one of the literals must be true. So if we now assign A the value of true, then it does not matter what the values or the truth assignments for B and C are, because the two disjunctions are true and the entire clause set is therefore also true. So once we've decided to make A true, we can immediately say that this sentence is satisfied. We call this early termination. So as soon as we can decide about the truth value of a sentence, we can actually stop further investigating the sentence. And this also helps in a sub-checking algorithm to examine or to avoid the examination of entire subtrees in the search tree when we are constructing an interpretation. So there is another interesting observation that we can exploit in algorithms that construct a satisfying interpretation. We call this the pure symbol heuristic. It can happen that a Boolean variable can occur positively or negatively only in a set of clauses. Yeah? So in general, we see mixed occurrences. But some model symbols only occur in a pure way. So they only either occur in a positive form or in a negative form. So let's look at the example here. In this formula, RA is pure because it only occurs in a positive form. There's no negation of A contained in this formula. B is also pure because it only contains a negated form. There's no positive appearance of B in this formula. C is impure because it contains in the middle clause in the negated form, and in the last clause it occurs in the positive form. So now if a sentence has a model, then it has a model with the pure symbols assigned so as to make the literals true, because doing so can never make a clause false. So in this case we would assign A true and not B true. So the pure symbol heuristic allows an algorithm to quickly detect true clauses. The example, if you take a look, then when we assign A to true, then the disjunction containing A will all be true. If we assign not B to be true, then the first two disjunctions will immediately be true. If we decided to make a false, then we had to actually work further on trying to make not B or C true. So as we are interested in constructing a satisfying interpretation or showing that no such interpretation exists, it is very effective for an algorithm to make literals true in this way, such that we can immediately then move on and decide that certain clauses then are true. We have another observation about clauses. This is the so-called unit clause heuristic shown on slide 48. So now we generalize the notion of unit clauses from clauses with a single literal to clauses where all but one are assigned false. We've already seen this previously shortly. So now if we take a longer clause and all literals have already been assigned false except one, then we know to satisfy this clause, the remaining unassigned literal must be true. So if you look at this, if we make B true, then not B is false, so it immediately means that not C must be true to satisfy this clause, and we must satisfy all clauses in our knowledge base to arrive at a satisfying interpretation. So now this means that C must be false for not C to be true. So in this sense, by propagating truth values, we can also derive new unit clauses. And we use this heuristic for unit propagation. So we have then a cascade of false truth values assignments because each unit class must be true for the overall knowledge base or formula to be true. So these ideas are exploited in the so-called DPLL algorithm. It was developed independently by two teams of researchers, David Putnam and Lojman and Loveland. We have a formula F in conjunctive normal form, and we want to construct a satisfying interpretation I. So either this algorithm returns unsatisfiable, or it will construct such a valid assignment for such a satisfying interpretation to all Boolean variables in our clause. So if our formula is the empty clause, then the algorithm can immediately return unsatisfiable because we cannot assign the value true to an empty clause. If our formula set contains a clause C and our interpretation makes this assignment false, then we actually also return unsatisfiable when we have not been able to construct a satisfying interpretation. So other ways we do some unit propagation to now exploit all your observations to assign as many forced Boolean variables which have to take on certain truth values as we can. If we have no clauses left, then our algorithm will actually return the interpretation it has constructed so far. Otherwise, now we actually take a literal which we have not been able to assign by unit propagation. We now apply the so-called splitting rule and we do it case distinction. So we actually investigate what happens if the literal L is either assigned true or if it is assigned false. And we prefer the value which actually leads on to a satisfying interpretation here. So let's look on slide 50 how this algorithm actually works. So we're giving a knowledge base containing three formulas. In this knowledge base, we have one unit clause R, and immediately we know that we need to set this to true, otherwise our interpretation would not be satisfying. So now we can actually do unit propagation. So R is true, we don't care about it anymore, we can remove it from the knowledge base. Not R is false, so this means that actually the remainder of the first clause, P and or Q, must be true. So now we have no pure symbols left. In each clause, either P or Q would turn positively or negatively. Now we have to apply the splitting rule. We decide to split on P. So we consider two cases, P is false or P is true. If we make P false, then not P is true. This also means that not Q must be actually, the entire formula must be actually true. So when we actually split on P now, we can actually derive certain and further enforce truth values. So if P is false, then it means that in the first clause, Q must be true. In the second clause, not Q must be true. So we derive these two unit clauses, and now we actually derive the empty clause. So this interpretation is not satisfying our knowledge base. Now we actually do backtracking and assign P is true in the second case. Let's look again what this enforces. So if P is true, then not P is false, so not Q must be true. In the first two clauses, P or Q, and in the last clause, P or not Q, both are satisfied. We can ignore them and do not need to consider them further. So this means now not Q is remaining as the only unit clause in the knowledge base, and now we know actually that Q must be false for not Q to be true. Now we've actually, with unit propagation, our knowledge base is empty. We have no unassigned or true clauses left anymore. So with this, we have constructed a satisfying interpretation. We just go back from this branch in the search tree and read off all the truth assignments. So we assigned R to true, P to true, and finally Q to false. And this is in fact a model of all the clauses in all our knowledge base. With this, let me end podcast 3 for the lecture on propositional logic.